So here's what some of them unfortunately say about the fact that the patriarchs and the matriarchs weren't able to have children without some sort of special intervention. The main concept is that the existence of Klal Yisrael is the presence of a nation whose... We've identified the fact that Israel is a mission nation, that they're a nation that God has consecrated as a holy people, and the people who are through whom the purpose of creation is to be realized. And in order to fulfill this role, not only their shamas, but their physical being is drawn from a higher source. The patriarchs and the matriarchs were more than just the fact that they seemed to be infertile. I mean, they talk about the fact that the matriarchs did not even have the anatomical equipment to have children. They didn't have a uterus. And that the prayers of the patriarchs and the special divine intervention was to change that which the physical world had determined was impossible, so that even their physical being, the fact that Klal Yisrael emerged in the world, would come from a source that was a transcendent nature. By nature, a nation such as Israel doesn't exist. It's not part of the natural order. It's a nation that has become part of the natural order by a divine decree. Israel moves through the world, in a certain sense, with physicality or with biological components, but it's a presence which has come about through, not through conventional means, but it's a presence which has come about because God wanted there to be a nation that would be of the physical world and yet not in the same way as everything else. So Avram and Sarah are both infertile, and Yitzchak and Rivka are both infertile. Yaakov and Leah don't have that problem. However, it's interesting that the matriarch Rachel, who also was part of this, the necessity for God to intervene in order to make her capable of bearing children, that it's in the space belonging to her children that we have the presence of the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash. So Yosef had the Mishkan under his jurisdiction, and ultimately came to rest in Binyamin, and the space belonging to Binyamin. The Beis HaMikdash, the Kodesh HaKodashim, was in the space of Binyamin. The Holy of Holies was in the space of Binyamin. The Temple Mount belonged to Shvatim, to Yehuda, and to Binyamin. And the Kodesh, the Holy of Holies, was in the space of Binyamin. The Lishkas HaGozes, where the Sanhedrin met, was in the space of Yehuda. The relationship between Bnei Yisrael, between the Ribbono Shel Olam and Bnei Yisrael, between Hashem and His people, incorporates two, as it were, two tides, two flows. One is the flow of God reaching out to Israel, and the other one is Israel reaching out to Hashem. So, when we fulfill God's will, when we serve Hashem, what we're trying to do is bring God into our world. We try to pronounce or to declare God's sovereignty over everything in our world. So when we conduct our everyday affairs, our ordinary day-to-day activity, we want to declare the fact that Hashem is the sovereign over these ordinary activities. So we bring God into them by fulfilling His will. At the same time, Hashem is interested in bringing us closer to Him. So there, in a certain sense, the directions are are bringing God down and God lifting us up. So, signifying those two things, we have, on the one hand, we have, let's say, the Sanhedrin, right? That's Yehuda, which is, the Sanhedrin is the body that represents the Torah Sheba'al Peh, the oral Torah, which is constantly trying to clarify what God's will is in all of the situations that govern our day-to-day activities. It's like we have the Gemara today as a product, the Academies of Learning, which is an extension of the Sanhedrin, and the Beis HaMikdash, and the Holy of Holies, which is really representative of the fact that God makes his presence felt here on earth. The one, God's presence, the God's Shekhinah, is intertwined with all kinds of larger-than-life things that transcend the ordinary. I mean, we talked about the fact that the Kodesh HaKodashim was a place where the Orem didn't occupy any space. It was there, and you measured it. If you measured it from the wall to the Orem on one side, you measured from the wall to the Orem on the other side, you got into the middle, and the Orem wasn't there. The Orem was something that was there and wasn't there. It was something that was larger than life. It was not subject to any physical laws. So the Kodesh HaKodashim really represents a place which is above the natural order, whereas the Sanhedrin represents the natural order. So you have, in Yaakov, you have two branches. You have Rachel and Leah. You have Yehuda, who is a child of Leah. That represents the Sanhedrin. You have the children of Leah. They're born in a conventional way. And then you have the children of Rachel, who are born out of the miracle of God's intervention, because they own the space of the beyond the natural. So you have these two dimensions. So up until the time of Yaakov, everything that happens is beyond the natural order, because the origins, the source of our people, is transcendent. And then Yaakov finally emerges as the patriarch who is a bridge. He now represents the presence of Israel as a nation in the world, working to confer God's sovereignty within the world and in the course of our everyday affairs. And at the same time, someone who is still part of that continuity of something that's beyond the world, that's supernatural. So it's not until Yaakov that you have someone who has children naturally, who has children that don't come by any natural means. And the ones who don't come by natural means are the ones where the Beis HaMikdash or the Mishkan stand. And the ones who do come, that's where the Sanhedrin stands. Yitzchak, up until the time of the Akedah, he could not have children. The Zohar, I mean, he was not capable of bearing children. It was the Akedah that first changed, that brought him to it. Yaakov did not have children until he was 80 or something. Well, I'll tell you in a second. 84, he was 60 when he left home. He was 14. And so he was 74. All right, he was 63 when he left home. And then he was in Beis Aver for 14 years. So that would be 77. Then he worked for 7 years, 84.
So they're pushing the natural limit.
Yeah. Well, we knew somebody. You know Belville Heller, right? Belville Heller in Denver was married as a young man and lost his wife and childbirth, did not remarry again until he was 70. Hmm. Between the ages of 70 and 84, he had four children. He had his youngest child when he was 84 years old. He married a young woman, he married a 30-year-old woman, and he had four children. two of the boys were my age, so whenever I would go out to Denver, I would hang out with them. And his youngest, he had two daughters. He had Shaul, who was his oldest son, and he had David, and he had a daughter, Zlata, and he had a daughter, Esther. Esther was the youngest. And Esther was 12 years old when her father passed away. And he managed to have a very, very close relationship with his kids. Esther was distraught. She was, when he passed away, it was just... All right.